Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello, folks. I'm Leonard Maltin, and this is Maltin on Movies with Baron
Vaughn. I'm that second guy.
Oh, yeah. You're a unison guy.
I was trying to say it at the same time.
Yeah, it worked.
Almost.
Well, close enough. Close enough.
I like how you're very like, wait a minute. I'm supposed to say it.
No, there's no rules here.
Well, all I'm trying to do
is... That's the beauty of podcasts. There are no rules.
I'm trying to surprise you, trying to scare you, if you will.
Oh.
In terms, because I'm trying to fit the theme.
This being our Halloween episode.
All Hallows Eve.
Yes. And, well, here's the problem that we have.
Yeah, what is the problem?
The problem is that we're both wimps when it comes to horror movies.
Hey, speak for yourself.
And for you?
I'm not a wimp. I just hate them.
Okay, that's a difference then. I am a wimp.
Okay, all right.
I am so easily scared. You can go boo and get me every time. And I just don't enjoy the new generation. It's not new anymore. But the latter day brand of gory films and even torture porn and all that stuff, like the Saw movies.
Once I
no stomach for it.
I saw The Orphanage, which we're not speaking about, although mm-hmm. we are talking about a movie that its producer made, mm-hmm. El Orfanato, Spanish mm-hmm. language film. And I think it was at the Sunshine in New York where I saw it. Mm-hmm. And it came out and they had propped up a review. I want to say it was Owen Gleiberman or mm-hmm. something like that. That's what they said. They said this movie is a cure to the bone-crunching literalism of horror movies today, where we're essentially just watching people get tortured mm-hmm. in these horribly imaginative ways that I don't like to watch.
Yeah.
I don't want to see someone's ankle get sliced off by some torturer. I want to have a story, dagnabbit.
That's right. And characters that you actually care about.
That I believe.
Yes, that are credible. Now, there are exceptions to every rule.
Of course.
Because the Swedish film, Let the Right One In, mm-hmm. I think is a fantastic movie. And it is very violent and shocking at times. And the American remake, Let Me In, is very well done. One of the best American – we've talked about it here on the show.
We talked about it on a different podcast, yes.
One of the best American translations of a foreign language film I've ever seen. So, you know, I went with that.
Well, and I think the thing is, though, that – there are stories there. Mm-hmm. There is a story. There are characters. There are real performances. Mm-hmm. They're films as opposed to just something to shock you because they need to make 18 of these things.
Right. Now, I grew up on – here I go into the old fogey land.
But go ahead.
I grew up on the original gothic horror classics, which is to say Frankenstein with Boris Karloff, Dracula with Bela Lugosi, The Bride of Frankenstein, which is maybe the best of all, with Boris Karloff and Colin Clive and Elsa Lanchester, which is the film that Mel Brooks drew on the most for his parody Young Frankenstein, which is another great Halloween movie. A Halloween movie you can actually share with your kids, as you can with Bride of Frankenstein, by the way, because these are not scary by today's standards. And they're more imaginative
there's more terror, if you will, than horror.
Yeah. And they're mood pieces. I'm a big fan of the original movie, The Wolfman, with Lon Chaney Jr. and a great, great cast, including Bela Lugosi and Maria Uspenskaya as the mysterious gypsy.
And, great name.
Isn't it? And so I love all of those. In the more recent world of films, I tend to like ghost stories, eerie stories.
Okay.
More than what one would call horror.
Do you know why?
You know, because I find those more intriguing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The others,
which is
2001,
actually a great.
You know?
Yeah, it's actually pretty good.
Nicole Kidman, good movie. I like Cloverfield.
I was in that.
Yeah?
For 5 seconds.
Ah, well, I must have blinked.
You did. Everyone I knew
Golly.
Did.
And there are two films that I'm very fond of that John Landis made, an American Werewolf in London, which sounds like, or it seems like at times it's going to be a comedy or a parody, but actually is a very potent horror film.
Mm-hmm.
And then a decade later, he made a film called Innocent Blood that I like a lot.
Mm.
A vampire film set in, is it Pittsburgh? I think it's Pittsburgh. With Anne Pario, the star of La Femme Nikita.
Oh.
La Femme Nikita.
Okay, yeah, I don't know that
Anthony
film.
Anthony LaPaglia, Robert Loggia, and Don Rickles.
Uh-oh. You got to put that Don Rickles
can't,
in
can't
it.
Can't go wrong. Can't go wrong. Anyway, there's a lot of films like that that, yeah. I, that I do enjoy.
And I like the work of David Lynch. So.
Uh-huh. Yeah, why not? But we've picked three today, and because it seems silly to unrecommend a movie today. We don't have a turkey this week.
Yeah, because so many horror movies are really bad. I mean, we don't need to tell you a bad one. You're already thinking of 20 bad ones. So let's recommend some movies that, you know, to people who don't normally go for this sort of thing, movies that we're like, that actually is really good.
Yep. And we're going to start with 28 Days Later.
Oh, snap.
2002. Pills. Boy, oh boy.
Instant classic, your least favorite phrase.
Yeah, yes, but, well, this is more than a decade has gone by now.
Yes, okay.
It might be okay to
call it a classic.
A classic.
A new classic.
Classic in the making, a modern classic.
Okay.
If you will, and you will. What a terrific film. The thing I find scary about this movie is that it's real. You can actually imagine it happening. And that's what's frightening. What's frightening is the idea of a plague, a virus or a plague, is so tangible and so utterly believable. And the way it happens in this movie makes it completely believable that it's like, oh my, this could really happen.
Yeah.
And how horrible would that be?
And in the first scene, you're with the premise, but when the person – this is just – there's a minor actor. I don't even know who it is.
Mm-hmm.
But in the beginning of the movie, when – if you're familiar with the movie, if you're not, you're going to watch it. A couple of people go to liberate some monkeys.
Yeah. This is in the first 5 minutes, so this is not really a spoiler.
Right. And at some point, there's a person who works at the facility, and he says, you can't. They're infected. And they say, infected with what? And he takes his pause, and he says, rage. And it's – on the paper, I would think that's the stupidest thing I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, in this film, that actor, that moment is completely believable. And you see the terror and the fear in his eyes. And I'm like, I don't know if we should let these monkeys go. I'm with you guys. But I don't think we should let them go.
I mean, normally you'd be rooting for people. You might be rooting, depending on your persuasion. But you might be rooting for people who want to free animals who are being used for testing.
Exactly.
But not here. Not here.
If that guy said rage to me like that, I would be like, okay, specifically this moment, these monkeys are staying. There's a lot of monkeys I want to free. So let's just go to the next place. But it – and for a lot of people, I think this might have been the first time that they had heard of Danny Boyle as well.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of people. This is their first exposure to him.
Man, oh man. Well, Trainspotting is the one that did it for me.
Trainspotting was, yes, for me as well. But for a lot of people, I think that this was a big mainstream thing for him.
Yes. And that first bite from the chimpanzee, which starts the plague, which initiates the plague, is just – it's scary as hell.
Yeah.
It's scary as hell. And then what happens is we go to Cillian Murphy, who both of us are fans of, if not for his other movie work, then certainly for his work on Peaky Blinders, that fantastic British TV show.
But this is the first time I ever heard of this man seeing this film as well.
Really good actor. And he wakes up in a hospital, which has been deserted. He doesn't know what's going on. And he – I mean, there's nobody there.
Little similarity to The Walking Dead, some of you might be fans of, but that's
and,
fine.
And unplugs his IV and, you know, gets rid of all the stuff that's restraining him and looks around, walks around.
Walks around the streets of London. The
streets of London.
A giant bustling city.
Deserted, which is always a creepy thing to see. When I was a kid, there was a movie – I saw a movie called The World, the Flesh, and the Devil with Harry Belafonte, Inger Stevens, and Mel Ferrer as the last three people on Earth.
Ooh.
And they walk through Manhattan. They walk through a deserted Manhattan what an eerie image that was as a little kid.
Ooh.
And I felt the same way here because he's walking by Big Ben. He's walking across the Thames. Nobody in sight. Nobody in sight. And he picks up a newspaper where the headline is "Evacuation," big bold letters with an exclamation point at the end.
He hits a wall where people have posted pictures.
Oh yes, yes,
of their lost ones.
Right, and notes to people where to find
them. It's freaky. He's like, I don't know what the crapple daps. But he also, by the way, he's been in a hospital. Like we said, he's emaciated.
Yep,
he's weak. He hasn't eaten.
And then there's a visual. It's a visual device that Danny Boyle uses. It's almost very hard to describe when, but it seems like some figures or people are whooshing by the camera in the foreground. And it's just, it recurs through the movie. And it's like, these are not slow, shambling zombie type people.
These are fast, infected with rage.
Yep.
Yeah, they never call them zombies.
No, never.
It's technically, you wouldn't say it's a zombie movie. It's an infection movie with scary somethings that are trying to eat you, coming at you fast.
Yep. I mean, there's no Freddy Krueger here. This is not like a madman on the loose. It's an uncontrollable plague that's turning ordinary people into monsters. And that's what's so fast. And then it also forces us to deal with the question of what would I do in this situation? Like, would I leave someone behind because they're slowing me down? And that comes up as a story point. Would I feel free looting a store? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not. Is it looting or is it survival?
Yeah, there's.
In this case, it's survival.
There's a. Let me get college real quick. There's a man named Antonin Artaud. He wrote a book called Theater and Its Double. And he talks about the theater and the plague. And he talks about that when the plague happens, it's when you see who people really are. Mm-hmm. It's when the performance stops and reality begins.
Interesting.
And a movie like this, which kind of delves into – which not kind of. It does delve into who are you? Who are these people that have been faced with this insane circumstance? And it's terrifying, terrifying, this entire film.
Whew. Yeah. And Cillian Murphy is really good, as are Naomi Harris.
Yes, Naomi Harris. I love that actress. I see her a lot, especially in things like Ninja Assassin, but that's a completely different story.
And she's the new Miss Moneypenny.
In the new James Bond
film Spectre.
Sam Mendes.
Right. And the wonderful Brendan Gleeson. This is one of his more benign characters.
Yeah. A loving, a doting father.
Yeah. And whose only concern is his daughter. And his daughter's safety. Cillian Murphy and Naomi Harris managed to, hook up with him and the daughter. And then there are four of them, and they feel some comfort in having,
four
safety
other
in numbers,
actual people.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's a terrifying world out there.
Especially because the terrifying thing, in a way, is not only the monsters, but it's also other people.
Other people.
Because you do not know what their goals are.
Yep.
Which becomes a very important plot point, especially once we meet a man played by Christopher Eccleston, who's a great British actor.
Yes.
Some of you might have seen him as Doctor Who for 5 seconds, but I never saw that. But he's an excellent actor.
Yeah, he is. And for Naomi Harris, it's a fraught situation because she is so far the only woman who has survived, which means she can reproduce.
Right, which, whew,
yeah.
There's some more terror there.
Yeah.
There's some more terror.
Pretty heavy going. This is a bravura film for Danny Boyle, who, as I say, I became aware of with Trainspotting in 1996. He'd already made Shallow Grave, which I saw after Trainspotting.
Mm.
And then he made A Life Less Ordinary and less successful film, The Beach, and then came back with 28 Days Later and then Millions.
Which I love.
Yes. And Sunshine, which is iffy. And then the hugely successful Slumdog Millionaire.
The gargantuan behemoth of Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah.
And now, right now, he has Steve Jobs,
yes.
out in the theater.
And it was written by Alec Garland, who wrote the novel The Beach – That's obviously how he and Danny Boyle met. He wrote Sunshine. He wrote a film I like called Never Let Me Go with Carey Mulligan and some other good folks. And he made his directing debut just this past year with a really good film called Ex Machina.
Oh, that's why I recognize that name.
Wrote and directed that film with Oscar Isaac and Alicia Vikander and Brendan Gleeson's son, Domhnall Gleeson.
Who we've seen other things.
Yes, he's
done some television work.
So if you want a scary movie that's sort of a cerebral scary movie, I think this would be a good choice. This is not an out-and-out, you know, like I don't know. It's not a conventional horror film.
Yeah, it's not by the numbers. And again, it's maintained by fantastic direction.
Yes,
a great eye, and also like watching it now, like I see that they were using some interesting technologies camera-wise. There are some shots that are very much almost like security footage, and it corresponds to how insane the world is that they're living in. And then there are some shots that are very beautiful once there's calm and once there's peace.
Yeah.
And then the performances.
Yeah.
The performances are pretty magnificent.
Now, back in 2002, there was some controversy because they released a second version of the film with a more downbeat ending than the one that I just saw the other day.
Really? I don't remember.
And I don't know if both of those versions are available on Blu-ray. I haven't done my research on this, but if you're curious enough, you might want to check that out.
Downbeat meaning a horrible one. Less, you mean less hope
well,
at the end?
Well, yeah, I guess.
Ooh, interesting.
I guess, yeah.
That's like Clue.
And we have another one, another really good film to recommend to you, one that we're both enthusiastic about. And which again, I would call sort of a modern-day classic.
Yes, I absolutely agree.
And we'll tell you what it is in just a minute.
In a moment.
No. You want to do the unison thing, don't you?
Doesn't matter.
No, come on.
Okay.
We'll tell you about it in just a moment.
Okay.
Friends, do you stream movies online? Isn't it time you found something that's actually worth watching? Stop searching through an endless list of movies you never heard of and all the worst ones you have. It's time you started watching great movies on Tribeca Shortlist. Emphasizing quality over quantity, Tribeca Shortlist provides unlimited access to a hand-picked catalog of movies that you won't find anywhere else. Watch personal on-camera recommendations from experts in the movie business and find their picks on Tribeca Shortlist. We're talking about movies like Elia Kazan's On the Waterfront with Marlon Brando. Nominated for 12 Academy Awards, On the Waterfront went on to win 8, including Best Picture, Best Actor for Brando, Best Supporting Actress for Eva Marie Saint, and Best Director for Kazan. Finding a great movie like that shouldn't take longer than watching one. So find a movie worth watching fast, the first time and every time, on Tribeca Shortlist. As a special offer to all Malton on Movies listeners, Tribeca Shortlist would like to invite you to enjoy a free month of this incredible new movie streaming service. So visit TribecaShortlist.com, enter promo code Malton to get your first month free and 15% off the monthly subscription fee. Remember, that's promo code Malton, M-A-L-T-I-N, all caps, and then TribecaShortlist.com. Watch good movies, old and new, at Tribeca Shortlist.
Good evening. Welcome back to Malton on Movies with Leonard Malton and Baron Vaughn. I'm glad that it's not called Malton on Movies with Leonard Malton and Baron Vaughn, but because that would be too long.
That would be terribly
long. We already have a long.
Yeah, we have a long.
Let's just condense it to Malton Peppa. Anyway, guys, we're talking about Halloween stuff.
Yes. Now, again, we're not recommending what I would call conventional Halloween movies.
Right. Because these are great movies.
That's not what we do.
We're not just saying, like, these will scare you and you'll be like, oh, there's poop in my pants.
Yes.
These are great films.
Yes. Pan's Labyrinth.
Woo, doggies.
Written and directed by Guillermo del Toro.
The master smith.
And I so regret that his new film, Crimson Peak, is just not up to par.
You heard it here. I haven't seen it yet. I'm still going to go watch it. But Malton, not a fan.
A beautiful-looking movie with very good performances by Mia Wasikowska and Tom Hiddleston.
Jessica Chastain.
Less enthusiastic about her performance, but she's a great actress. She is a great actress.
All right.
But this is not her finest hour. But if anyone doubts, and I don't know that anyone does, Guillermo del Toro's mastery of the medium, all you need to do is see Pan's Labyrinth. this is he's a more than a fan. He's an aficionado of fairy tales, and he takes them very seriously, and feels that over the years they've been
maligned.
Watered down. No, they've been watered down. Mm. That the original versions of these fairy tales were much more potent and even gruesome and explicit.
Yeah, I mean, that's like Grimm's fairy tales as well. Like no offense to one of your favorite things alive, Disney.
Yes.
But a lot of them are much darker.
When Guillermo came to my class with Pan's Labyrinth, he said this. He said, "I believe all fairy tales are intrinsically political. Every single fairy tale tries to teach a lesson. It's either a lesson in favor of the establishment or against it. Hmm. You know, obey your parents or you'll be eaten, destroyed, maimed, mutilated. That's a lesson, and it's fairly political. There are fairy tales that are pretty liberating. There are fairy tales that teach you obedience, and in this case, this is a fairy tale that teaches you disobedience as a virtue, which I believe it is. So I wanted to make, in the context of the world today, a fable about choice and a fable about disobedience being a virtue."
Mm.
That's his mantra for Pan's Labyrinth, which is an unusual film in every single way.
Right.
It takes place after the Spanish Civil War, when Spain has been taken over by fascist rule. But there are still rebels, literally out up in the hills.
Rebels in the hills, definitely.
And they are still trying to fight the good fight against these
Franco
oppressive people who have come into power. And into this world comes a wide-eyed 10-year-old girl named Ophelia. And she has a very active imagination, which comes in handy when she needs an escape from the reality of her life, which is terribly harsh and brutal. Her widowed mother, who's pregnant, has come to live with a new husband, a Spanish captain who is just a monster.
Mm-hmm.
A man without conscience, without feeling.
And he has power.
Yep.
And he acts like he has power.
Yeah. All he cares about is conquering these resistance fighters who surround his mountain headquarters. So Ophelia is happily blessed with the ability to escape. To escape into a world,
into a world of her
imagination.
Yes.
And it's a mystical world where a faun, rather unusual character, a faun, presents her with a series of challenges that will free her from her unhappy existence. And we share this world of wonder with her and see how it provides a counterpart to her everyday life. And what's so interesting in the setup that Guillermo has given us is that the real world is full of horror. And the make-believe world, which has its scary things too, is the escape.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you'd imagine the imaginary world would be the escape, but it too
is filled with horror.
Is filled with its own kind of horror, its own brand of terror.
Its own rules, its own logic,
yep.
Its own ways to kill you,
yeah.
If you don't obey the rules.
Yep. It's such an unusual, such a fascinating film. Fascinating.
And visually...
Oh, man.
Striking. Just magnificent.
The detail, the level of and layer of detail in the film is some of which you're not really even aware of. He layered in things like this officious captain is dressed in leather all the time, leather gloves, leather boots and all that. And he put in like subtle little squeaking of the leather. Mm-hmm. On the soundtrack. It's not anything you'd notice unless you're listening for it, unless you'd read an interview with Guillermo del Toro.
There's the same happens with a couple of sharp instruments.
Mm-hmm.
There's a key at some point. There's a knife. And every time you hear it, it's like ting or like shink, like coming out of the sounds are amazing.
Yeah. He wants you to feel what this little girl is feeling. And the film is told largely through her eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Not completely, but largely through her eyes. Through the prism of her her worldview.
Well, she's stuck between the two worlds.
Yes.
She's stuck between this horror of the real world and this horror of this fantasy world, and we, the audience, are her. So we see both unfolding in front of us.
Yeah. And talk about tough choices.
Forks
choices.
In the road.
Oh, boy. It's It's no wonder it won the Academy Award for cinematography, art direction, and makeup, and to which one can only say amen and bravo, because it is a fantastic piece of art, both in its content and in its execution. And it got nominated for original screenplay and music and best foreign language film. Mm. And I want to see what it lost to. Well, it lost to The Lives of Others from Germany, which is also a great film.
I don't know it.
Oh, it's a great, great movie.
Okay.
It's a great movie. I mean, I was sort of rooting for Pan's Labyrinth, but I couldn't argue with Lives of Others winning, because that too is an exceptional film. But I don't know how a kid would interpret this movie. It'd be interesting to know. It'd be interesting to watch us with an adolescent, not a little kid,
right?
But an adolescent.
And I feel like this is the kind of movie that will turn you into Guillermo del Toro, because this is the kind of thing that he must experience. Yeah. That he was what he was looking for when he was the age of our main character.
Yeah.
So, like we have both said, it's very, very dark.
Well, in real life, his father was kidnapped.
Ooh.
So he experienced as a young boy in Mexico a kind of terror. Not a kind of terror, a very real form of terror. And it tells you a lot about him.
Yeah, and you can see that through line in some of his other films. Mm-hmm. Like specifically I'm thinking of The Devil's Backbone.
Oh, it's a great film,
which is fantastic. I hadn't seen it until a couple of years ago. But
not as well known as Pan's Labyrinth, but,
yes.
But it ought to be as well known as Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah, it's one of his earlier works.
The Devil's Backbone is just great. And Kronos, the first film that sort of his breakthrough movie, is a really
my playlist. I'm coming to it.
Yeah.
But of course, some of you might know him. Of course, he directed Blade.
Yes.
And I love all those movies.
And Blade 2.
And Hellboy as
and
well.
Hellboy and Hellboy 2.
Yes, Hellboy 2 I think is better, but that's a different story that we can talk about.
Did he do both Blades? Am I getting that wrong?
There's three Blades.
Yeah.
He did the first two.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. And Hellboy is a lot of fun. I mean, it's wild, but it's a wild ride, but it's fun.
It's very dark steampunk.
Yeah.
And there's some steampunk elements to this movie as well, Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah. As I say, I wouldn't show this to
a child.
To a child,
a very dark child, you would.
Yeah, maybe so. Someone like Christina Ricci is Wednesday.
Wednesday in
the Addams
Family.
Yeah.
It's a perfect choice. She'd be like, "I love this movie. I love how she dies at the yes, exactly."
Oh my! Well, we've run out of superlatives here.
Yeah, you've seen it
because
see it again.
If I say. Because my job is to watch new movies and my fun is to watch old movies, I don't get to actually just casually revisit films until now when I'm doing this podcast. And it obliges me or forces me to go back and see films I saw in the last decade or so. And some, it's like visiting them, like seeing them all over again through fresh eyes. Mm. And Pan's Labyrinth is just such a film that I was delighted to revisit.
Very dark, not that funny, which, by the way, will take us to our next movie, especially for myself, because being a funny person, when I've been attracted to things that are quote-unquote horror movies, it's usually because there's some humor in them,
yes.
Thanks to somebody like Mel Brooks, who would bring me in with Young Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sam Raimi is another one of my favorite directors, and mm-hmm. there's certain directors like Edgar Wright who have followed in the tradition mm-hmm. of that. And so the final movie we're speaking about will be in that, and we'll get to that.
When will we get to that, Baron?
Yes, we'll get to that
in just a moment. Friends, I'm excited to introduce you to Howl FM, the best, most convenient way to listen to all the episodes of Malton on Movies. It's on the web at Howl FM and on the go with the Howl app. You can stream and download all Malton on Movies episodes that have been released in the past 6 months. Go beyond the audio with behind-the-scenes photos, commentaries, and more. You can even go further by upgrading to Howl Premium for only $4.99 a month. Get exclusive access to the entire Malton on Movies archive and to all the Earwolf and Wolf Pop archives. This includes all episodes older than 6 months. They've all been remastered and have no advertising. Only with Howl Premium, listen to hundreds of hours of Marc Maron's WTF archives. You can hear classic interviews with Robin Williams, Louis C.K., many, many more. And Howl has also partnered with some of your favorite hosts and comedians to develop Howl Originals. Those are brand new shows available only with Howl Premium. You can check out the great new series from Lauren Lapkus and the AV Club right now. There are already 10 brand new hilarious Howl originals. We're adding new shows every week. Get access to all this exclusive content both on your phone and on your desktop with Howl Premium for only $4.99 a month. And with the promo code MALTIN, that's M-A-L-T-I-N, you get a full month of a free trial. Try it out. Go to Howl FM and enter code MALTIN at checkout. Remember, you can use Howl on your phone or your computer, but you can only use my promo code on Howl FM, the website. So go to Howl FM, that's H-O-W-L.FM, and use the promo code MALTIN, M-A-L-T-I-N, for one free month trial of Howl Premium. Give it a try. Welcome back to Malton on Movies with Baron Vaughn. He's Baron Vaughn.
Yes, and you are Leonard Maltin. You could say that I am the Dale of the two of us.
Okay.
And you are the Tucker.
All right, if you want to cast it that way.
Okay.
Because we're talking about – well, all right. We're talking about Tucker and Dale versus Evil, a film from 2010 that I'm wildly just crazy about and that I proselytized for and have since the day it opened. But I want to just preface this by saying that I am a sucker for films that combine horror and humor.
Yes.
Or horror and comedy. Young Frankenstein being an obvious example. Shaun of the Dead.
Yes. Edgar Wright directing.
A newer example of that with Simon Pegg. And one of my all-time favorite movies, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Huh.
And the secret of that movie is that, first off, they got Bela Lugosi to play Dracula again. They got Lon Chaney Jr. to play the Wolfman again.
Whoa.
They got Larry Talbot, a.k.a. the Wolfman. And they got Glenn Strange, who had played it before, to play Frankenstein's monster again. And it was done at Universal Pictures by the same people who had worked on those classic films.
Hmm.
So Abbott and Costello do their comedy, but the monsters are completely serious. And they're not sending themselves up. They're not doing pratfalls. They're being monsters, and Abbott and Costello are playing against them, and it's just a wonderful film. And of course, it's a film I saw as a kid, and we all have a special fondness for films we grew up with.
Of course,
but I think this would still play for anybody.
Oh, well,
at least that's an educated guess.
I cannot believe I have never seen that movie.
Well, they went on to make others. They made Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy. Abbott and Costello Meet Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Abbott and Costello Meet the Killer,
so
Boris Karloff.
It was a Dagnab series.
None of them as successful as Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. That is the one that just hit the bullseye. So
okay.
That's an incidental recommendation.
And I'm a Ghostbusters fan.
Well, sure.
That's something I saw as a kid, Ghostbusters. But also a little movie called Army of Darkness, which exposed me to Sam Raimi and Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2.
Mm-hmm.
And Those are the things I saw when I was a youngster, being like, oh, I like that, not everything else.
Well, now along comes Tucker and Dale versus Evil, which is a film you may not know because it got the most desultory release from a smaller distributor. And the reason for it, I'm going to go off on a little tangent, the reason for it is it played at South by Southwest at a midnight showing, and it played like gangbusters. I think it also played Sundance at a midnight show and scored just – audiences just loved it. And the problem is it was available for bootlegging online. So many people downloaded illegal bootlegs of this movie that several distributors who were interested in it said the cream of the audience has been skimmed off already. And then another distributor who was very interested in it said, well, how do you sell this film, as a horror film or as a comedy? It's like, well, you're in the movie business. Figure it out. But they didn't figure it out.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that our genre obsession as a country can do a disservice to a movie like that. The bootlegging thing does suck, but I'm telling you, the real thing is always better.
Well,
people would have downloaded it illegally and watched to see what happened, but that's not the same as seeing it in the theater.
No, of course
with
not.
200 people who are also enjoying it.
I showed this to my class at USC twice. Once right after Sundance, I think. And once when it was about to be released a year later with the writer-director Eli Craig as my guest.
Oh.
And it played fantastically well both times because it is a clever, funny movie. What's it about? Okay. It's about these two guys who are kind of – I don't know. How do you describe them?
Hillbillies.
Well, no, they're not quite
they're
hillbillies.
They're described as hillbillies in the movie.
Yes.
But it is actually an important plot point.
Yes.
So let's just say hillbillies.
They're perceived as hillbillies.
They're southern gentlemen who are just a little dirtier than you want them to be, seem a little more backwoods than you're looking at them thinking, oh, Deliverance is what you're thinking.
Yes. Well, that's the whole point of the movie. The point is that these college kids, stereotypical college kids, off for a weekend in the woods, a la Friday the 13th, or dozens of other movies of that
ilk. It's a tried and true premise of a group of college kids going to the woods.
And they initially encounter Tucker and Dale in their pickup truck passing them. And to look at them, to look at Tucker and Dale in their bib overalls, is to say, oh, my God, these are like spooky hillbillies from the mountains.
Yeah. Are they the Hills Have Eyes kind of people? What's going on here?
And then the college kids stop at a local store to get beer, and their impression is only magnified of these two guys, that they're creepy and they're something bad is going to happen. Well, the misunderstandings just escalate because the misunderstandings are on both sides of the fence. Tucker and Dale, who are actually nice guys.
Yeah.
Nice guys who've just bought what they call a vacation home.
In the woods.
Which is a ramshackle cabin that they hope to fix up. And are really, they're nice guys. They're very happy to have a place to get away.
And one of the things that they do here is when we come into this movie, we're in the perspective of the college kids.
Mm-hmm.
When we first see Tucker and Dale, we're like, ugh, scary. Then suddenly the movie flips to their perspective. And we're like, oh, it's just two guys.
Yeah.
Just two weird dudes.
Yeah. And there is some foreshadowing. The film opens with a parody of found footage. Where a female reporter is going into a dark, spooky house, and then she's clubbed, and a bloody face emerges into the camera lens. And then we see a title that says 3 days earlier.
Right.
So something terrible does happen here, but why and how? And then a patrolman pulls over Tucker and Dale in their pickup, and they have a broken turn signal or something like that. And this patrolman tells him, there ain't nothing but pain and suffering up there, the likes of which you can't imagine.
Right. They have no idea what's happened in this house. This house that they have bought was the place of some horrible events.
Yeah.
And they are completely clueless. But that sheriff puts that fear into them. And they're like, well, seems nice. I don't know.
And as Dale says when he looks at the cabin, what do they call this, a fixer-upper? Then one of the college kids makes things worse. The snottiest of the college kids makes it worse by spooking his friends, tells him a story about a Memorial Day massacre that occurred in these hills 20 years ago. Now, okay, this is the setup of the movie. Tucker and Dale, of course, see these college kids, and there's one particularly pretty blonde girl.
Played by Katrina Bowden.
Right.
You might remember from 30 Rock.
30 Rock, and she's now on Ed Burns' show, Public Morals. And Dale gets goggle-eyed over this pretty girl.
Goggle-eyed, okay.
And he doesn't know, and Tucker says, "Go approach her. You know, you're not a bad-looking guy. You could go over and say hello to her."
And Dale, thinking nothing of it, grabs his scythe
like the Grim Reaper,
and then walks over there, and in this stammering, awkward way, tries to speak to them, and he looks like a murderer. So they run away.
Right. So the college kids are convinced that these two guys are creeps who are going to somehow
disembowel and torture them
in the dark of night. And Tucker and Dale have their own vision of these college kids and what they're all about, and especially this one girl who must be, on a pedestal somewhere, an unreachable, unattainable young woman. And all of these things get inverted and twisted in and out, and that's the cleverness of the movie. The other beauty of the movie is the casting.
Yes.
Tyler Labine plays Dale, and Tyler Labine was currently on a Hulu show called Deadbeat.
Which is very funny.
which I haven't seen yet.
He's very, very good in it.
Well, he's good in everything. He's been on so many series. He's been on Reaper, Sons of Tucson, Mad Love, Animal Practice, and most of them haven't lasted very long.
Right, but he's so good that he keeps getting work.
Yes, exactly. And Deadbeat now has been renewed for another season. So that's going to be around for a while. And Tucker is played by Alan Tudyk, a wonderfully talented actor, just an incredibly versatile actor who can do almost anything.
They're both those guys who were in that thing. You've seen their faces
but 100. A lot of fans and fanboys know Alan Tudyk because of his presence in Firefly.
And the movie Serenity as well.
Right, and the movie Serenity. And now he has a web series called Con Man. Do you know about this?
No, I don't know it.
Oh, man. He got a huge, something like $2 million in a Kickstarter campaign.
What?
Yeah, that's his fan base because he works the convention circuit.
Right, of course.
And because of Firefly and Serenity. And it gave him an idea for a series about a guy who works the convention circuit. Not unlike Galaxy Quest, a film you and I both like a lot.
Yes, yes.
So he's invented a character for himself named Ray Nerley. And the show that he's on was a short-lived show called Spectrum, a sci-fi show turned a cult classic.
Hmm.
And these are his adventures. And each episode is 10 to 20 minutes long. And they're now available online. You can get it any number of places online. And Nathan Fillion is a co-star, and he gets a number of interesting guest stars as well.
His cohort from Firefly.
Mm-hmm. So they got something like in 24 hours they broke the records for the highest amount ever crowdfunded.
Oh my goodness!
And 46,000 fans contributed $3.2 million for the first season. Just
That's
amazing!
Incredible.
And it's called Con Man. It says on the website, because it sounds cooler than Convention Man. These are the two stars of this wonderful.
Yeah,
film,
when
Tucker
you watch
Dale
his when you Eva. Watch Alan Tudyk's work, you see why people would happily fork over a couple dollars to help this man.
He's
make
so
a
good.
Series.
If you saw the original British Death at a Funeral, he's awfully funny in that. Very, very funny in that. He's done a lot of voice work too. Does a lot of voice work, and if you saw Wreck-It Ralph. He was the voice of King Candy.
Yes.
Who was inspired by the great comedian Ed Wynn.
His rendition of Ed Wynn is fantastic. I do an Ed Wynn myself, but I won't bother you.
Oh,
with it.
My.
Bother you. But he's fantastic in Wreck-It Ralph, which was a great movie as well.
Yes. Half of a great movie.
Okay, calm down. I'm going to wreck it. But we're talking about Tucker and Dale.
Anyway, Tucker and Dale versus Evil. It's. The gist of the movie, which we haven't really explained fully, is that these kids are convinced that these two hillbillies are going to murder them. And then they start dying.
They perceive everything that Tucker and Dale do as part of some murderous plot. Every piece of information they overhear, everything they see, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that their friend, Katrina Bowden, she gets up on – they're going to go skinny dipping. She hits her head and they save her.
They rescue her.
They rescue her. But it doesn't look like that.
It looks like she's been abducted.
And we'll leave it there.
Yeah.
This movie unfolds in, as you said, an incredibly clever way.
Yes. And it sounds like – it seems like a one-joke movie, but it's not.
It's not.
It develops and develops well. And I'm such a fan. And I feel so bad for the filmmaker Eli Craig who you know, a really good movie is a rare and precious thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you make one, when you're lucky enough to make one, or you're lucky enough to find one as a viewer,
mm-hmm.
you know, it ought to be cherished, it ought to be nurtured. And this film was not nurtured.
Mm.
It deserved to be nurtured. And but it's not too late. You can discover it now.
Nurture it.
Nurture it. It's worth it. I just have to add as a PS, I know he doesn't like to use this as his calling card, but it's online. It's no secret. Eli Craig happens to be the son of Sally Field.
Wow.
He was not raised in Hollywood. And
one of my favorite actresses.
Yeah, well, she's a great actress.
Yeah.
She's a wonderful, wonderful – I mean, and she's had such a durable and amazing career and continues to have an amazing career. She's in an indie film right now that is about to be released.
And speaking of which, I mean, I want to get back to this film real quick. One of the reasons that it works, again, the performances. Yeah. They play it for truth.
Oh, yes.
It's a situation where you do not doubt what's going on here.
No. If either Tyler Labine or Alan Tudyk winked at the camera even once,
at any point,
it would all be over.
It would be done.
It would all be over.
And that's in the tradition of movies like Ghostbusters. Yep. It's in the tradition of movies like Shaun of the Dead, mm-hmm. which we spoke about before. Yep. It's really, really, really good.
No. They believe in these characters and they make them real. As you said, they play for truth. And Eli Craig's script allows them to do that because he wrote them so well. These two characters, he wrote them so well. They're fully realized. They're fully realized. So this is not just a glib one-joke movie at all. It's a film that works from start to finish.
Yeah.
Start to finish. So good.
Especially the versus evil part. Woof. And that's what – I love that it's evil because evil is the concept that mm-hmm. everyone is struggling with mm-hmm. in this movie.
Yeah.
Very, very well done.
It's perception versus reality.
Yes.
That's what the whole movie's about, is perception versus reality. Oh, my.
And you will proselytize. I think this is one of those movies that makes people go, oh, okay, anyone I know who hasn't seen this has to see this.
Yeah. You're going to tell all your friends. You're going to tell all your friends, you got to see this movie because you got to see this movie.
Oh, I saw that 10 years ago on a bootleg. No, watch it for real. You didn't see it good quality. Watch it.
Right. So those are our Halloween recommendations. And we mentioned some other films in passing. That are great, like Young Frankenstein and Shaun of the Dead, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. There are a lot of wonderful films.
I want to recommend Bubba Hotep.
Oh, I love Bubba Hotep.
Don Coscarelli.
Oh, yes.
He also did a movie called John Dies at the End, which I like a lot, except for the end. But that's a totally different problem.
Bubba Hotep is fun.
Oh, yeah.
Ossie Davis.
As JFK. It's I can't even say anything more.
Ossie Davis plays a man in a nursing home in East Texas who truly believes he's John F. Kennedy.
But he might be. That's part of the thing.
Whereas
Elvis.
My brain just went dead on
it. Bruce Campbell
is really truly believes he's Elvis Presley.
And he might be. We don't know. It's actually beside the point.
Yes.
Watch the movie.
That film is called Bubba Hotep. You'll thank us. Tucker and Dale versus Evil, no question about it. So that's our Halloween show. That's our program for the week.
28 Days Later, Pan's Labyrinth,
Tucker and Dale versus Evil. Yep. We did it in unison again.
There you go.
As our wont of late.
Yep.
And if people are looking for you out and about, Baron, where might they find you?
Oh, I'm on Twitter. I'm at Barvon Black with a Q. That's spelled, you know how it's spelled, maybe.
I'll tell them again.
I'm surprising you because it's, okay, Barvon Black. Leonard, where can they find you?
On Twitter, at Leonard Maltin, and online at leonardmaltin.com. And thanks again for listening and for supporting us and for being there. We will see you again next time.
I hope you make it to All Saints Day.
Hello, podcast listeners. Now that your program has ended, why not listen to the best podcast in the universe, Improv for Humans?
Oh, welcome to Improv for Humans with Matt Besser. That's me.
Improv legend Matt Besser and his friends. Take your suggestions.
Three of the best improvisers in the world will be improvising off your suggestions given to me at Twitter, newspaper articles. We're going to crap on YouTube.
And turn them into long-form improv comedy.
Hello, 911. What's your emergency?
Look, I am being harassed by my bank.
Hold on a second. First, I need you to pick a sight key picture.
Oh, jeez.
You can pick a boat. You can pick a candy cane. You can pick a pumpkin.
I will take the boat.
Please listen to all the options first, sir. You can pick a block of cheese, or you can pick a wheel of cheese.
Is the
I'm sorry, sir. You only had five seconds.
God damn it!
You only had 5 seconds.
God,
the police cannot help you.
Listen to Improv for Humans on iTunes, Earwolf.com, Howl, or your favorite podcast app.
Pop.
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 This has been a Wolf Pop production,
Executive produced by Paul Scheer, Adam Sachs, Chris Bannon, and Matt Gourley. For more information and content, visit wolfpop.com.